Hey everyone, welcome to the Mobility Podcast. This is Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE Greg. And once again at the SAE Innovations and Mobility Conference in rainy Novi, Michigan. And we've had some fantastic discussions across the course of this week. And today I'm really excited to be joined by Tony Ho, who is the VP of Global Business Development at Segway. Tony, you have kind of an interesting point at which you entered Segway, which was about 2.5 years ago before this sort of boom happened. Did you could you see this coming? Did you read this in a crystal ball that this was about to happen? Or how have you really seen this occur?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. If I said I have a crystal ball about this micromobility space, I would be lying to you. So it is true that when I joined Segway, we are essentially the world manufacturer or provider for the self-balancing vehicles for the longest time, starting from year 2000, way before I joined Segway. So the main focus of the company was on that product category. However, it's been in the history for the company for quite a while. The mission of the company is about simply moving, and in essence, it's a simplified movement of people or objects. So that mission has not changed since the beginning. In fact, even before the scooter craze, Segway and also together with Xiaomi at that time was the first scooter manufacturer to produce electric kick scooters in scale. One of the reasons we were able to capture the opportunity is because we actually had a head start. Approximately 2 years ahead of the race. So I guess hindsight, you can see the decision made by the two founders of the company early on gain quite a bit of advantage in this space.
Mm-hmm. And what sold you about going to Segway? I mean, where were you previously? What inspired you previously that led you there?
Actually, that's a loaded question because partially because Segway for the longest time was a New England proud and as a sort of innovative company, and I went to school in Boston and essentially my second half of my career I've known Segway for the longest time, so it's a very good brand and reputation. And second is that the merger and acquisition between Nibot and Segway provides some tremendous amount of leverage, both from branding or supply chain point of view. So my background, as you can tell, I have a cross-culture, multicultural background, so I am familiar with both culture or work environment across the ocean, if you will. I also happen to run and start a few technology company in China, and so this just happened to be the sort of the marriage made in heaven in this case. And so for me, it's a great career opportunity for me as well.
That's incredible. So Segway was really well positioned, as you said. And, when shared bikes came around, it felt like those lasted for maybe a blink of an eye, and all of a sudden it became scooters. How did Segway really capitalize on this? Or what is it that you think led to Segway capitalizing the success?
One of the things I just mentioned is having some head start is actually really helpful. In 2018, one of the major advantage we have over many competitors, even maybe the operators themselves, is that we already made over 200,000 or 300,000 scooters, even before the sharing scooter came up. And these are scooters sold to Best Buy and the retail channels across the globe. And they were sold to these individuals, and then sometimes people running errands. And in China, there's just drivers for people drinking, and they would drive your car home, and they would ride the scooter home. But these are kind of niche market. But adding all these niche market together globally allow us to get a head start to make the few hundred thousand units. But the interesting thing is, 2018, this is essentially the quantity, the whole capacity of the industry. Mm-hmm. So that's why, 2018, it was sort of the year of, people fighting for the supply. So for us, I think getting some head start is definitely one thing. And number two is that we actually gained many sort of expertise in this electric mobility, micromobility space by doing the Segway self-balancing category of product. They share the same components, probably a little bit even more complicated. And also by the name of Nibod, you probably can guess. Nibod initially, when they first started, is meant to be a robot company. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the electric controls and mechanisms, and also and even the interface between computers and the devices, and the knowledge starts to accumulate. And so scooter is actually a little bit easier compared mm-hmm. to a Segway vehicle. So naturally, it becomes becomes fairly straightforward for us to do this. The trick is really kind of how do you mass produce and scale, and that's something we kind of mastered over the past 7 or 8 years when we make essentially millions of the self balancing Segway scooters, and then those device. All the learnings was transformed into the scooter manufacturing and design, and also sort of the new features and all these things adding into it.
Mm-hmm. When the original sort of Segway self-balancing vehicle came out, there were all these lofty proclamations about how it was really going to revolutionize transportation. I think that we saw that uptake wasn't exactly what was predicted. There's something interesting happening with scooters in that there are these lofty proclamations, but also they're actually everywhere. What do you think about this? Is there a case study maybe in sort of the Segway self-balancing vehicle that can be ported over into these shared scooters?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people actually write about the history of Segway. And in fact, it's, I think it was MIT Technology Review talking about Segway was one of the failure in sort of last decade. But the interesting thing is that throughout this whole scooter craze, and it looks like Segway is coming back again. Mm-hmm. Not in the original embodiment of the self-balancing, mock-up type mm-hmm. of product. We call them PT, Segway PT, but in a new form of kick scooters. I think the main driver behind this is probably multiple fold. One is I think the industry has evolved so much that a lot of the cost of producing electric vehicles become very, very affordable. So we'll give you a good example that the Segway PT used by the police force and the mall cop alike, they range from $6,000 to $10,000 roughly, and depends on how many you buy. But essentially, that's a cost of a lower-end car. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a kick scooter nowadays, they retail a fraction of that cost, essentially maybe an order of magnitude cheaper. Mm-hmm. So that makes things become very, very affordable. So using some business school terms, we're really seeing a market get disrupted by a sort of lower-end product. And so in this case, by lowering the price and lower the entry barrier for regular consumers, essentially everybody can use them for many, many different purposes and solve their own pain point. And a lot of them, we probably don't even know they exist. So I think that's sort of the driver, the technology driver behind this, how things get cheaper over time, and also, the electronics, the hub motors, and the material itself, they all become better and cheaper and over time. It's almost like Moore's law for transportation almost. So the timing it seems to happen now as opposed to 20 years ago. So that's sort of essentially Segway got a second chance, right? Think about the ability to lower the cost significantly. And two is, I think for the longest time, people I call them barking on the wrong tree, because if you go to any municipality meeting, talk about city congestion solutions and also the achievement by the cities, it's always talk about bicycle lanes, mm-hmm. right? Talking about how many bicycles people are riding,
right.
and including the European market. One thing people didn't realize, or maybe most of us didn't realize, is that the scooter form factor, when it's not powered, it's not really a transportation tool, because you can't really kick your way 2 miles, and that would be a lot of kicking.
Doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah. It doesn't at all, right? So the kids might enjoy it, but it's actually not a serious transportation device. But nowadays, if you look at the packaging with the battery, the hub motors in there, it become a seriously almost a perfect form factor mm-hmm. to pack all the energies and also the mobility in a small package, right? So once, especially you get a foldable device and you fold it up and you can put it in your own car or trunk. And in fact, I would encourage maybe the whole family pack like 4 or 5 of them in your trunk mm-hmm. So the whole family can go together with a scooter ride. So in that sense, it's a lot more optimal device in terms of space utilization, in terms of ease of use. So for example, we noticed there's a lot of ladies like to ride scooters better than bicycles, because skirts, and also you don't want to sit on a dirty seat mm-hmm. from a shared bike. And so in some way, the benefit of a simplistic form factor like a kick scooters is the main advantage over a bicycle or any other micromobility form factor, precisely because it's very, very simple. And so there's actually people asking me, should we put seat on the kick scooter? I said, like, no. The whole point is that you stand there, it's very simple, and you don't need to adjust the seats, right? So you just step on it, you go, and mm-hmm. you get off, and when you're done, you cannot get any simpler than that. It takes much less space, and it costs way less to manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things combined that made scooters almost like hindsight is the essentially the optimal form factor. Of course, I think, you know, sometimes money has everything to do with everything. So mm-hmm. So in this case, the venture capital money and everything, all the money pouring into the space definitely helped to educate the market and advocate for the new form factors. So I guess when all the stars are aligned mm-hmm. and it appears that you know the vote is out and scooter form factor is best form factor.
Mm-hmm. Another star that was interestingly aligned was also the decrease in the cost of lithium ion batteries with electric vehicles coming on mm-hmm. and everyone having a smartphone in pocket. And I think that was really also a big driver, and it's kind of fascinating to see, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And so there's been a lot of media coverage about the short lifespan of scooters and, you know, suggestions that they're not really meeting the initial predictions. And so these new iterations that are coming into the fleets, they're thicker, they're meant to be more durable. Where do you see that going? And could you talk about maybe that change in design that's been occurring?
Yeah, definitely that's happening. Basically making the scooter last longer, more durable in different weather conditions, less susceptible to vandals and theft. And so that's definitely happening. One of the sort of inevitable consequence of this is that the scooter become heavier and very hard to lift and whatnot. So we actually see the product actually going to sort of opposite direction. One is to the retailers, when people buying them for the personal use, they actually demand for something different. Like, you know, ladies want a pink scooters or kids mm-hmm. want lighter scooters, while some power user want heavy one, you know, longer lasting, longer range scooters. So they actually went to different extreme. And I use this sort of analogy, compare this to, like, say, the early days of automotive companies. And in the beginnings, everything is a Model T, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're getting to the point that, you know, essentially the Model T is the shared ones on the street. But there will be people demanding the higher-end scooters and sort of, I call them workhorse. If you deliver boy, you probably want a longer-lasting scooters and tougher one. Mm-hmm. But if you're a lady, you don't want to lift heavy scooters. You want something better-looking, and it can pack nicely into your car, or even for kids. So that the diversification of the product lines and seems to be a trend we're observing as well. But to say the least, you can definitely count on new product or new innovation come up in this industry. Mm-hmm. And we're quite excited about that.
Right. Yeah. And so I guess from a business development perspective, as we're looking at the trajectory of the scooter industry, are there any concerns that you might have about Bird or Lime turning from customers into competitors? Do you see that as potentially happening?
Oh, yeah. I think the fact of the matter is I think the major players, especially the big ones, they are starting to manufacture their own product. I think in some way we've seen this happening even in the early days, because we are a brand and product-driven company or innovation-driven companies. In some way, we hold very near and dear to our heart with our brand, and so basically, there's a little bit of conflict of interest between the operator's brand and our brand. And you probably noticed that all our scooter has a Powered by Segway logo on them, right. which appear to be a very, very powerful branding. For us, and even to some degree with our operators as well. But I think not all companies think the same or doesn't have the same strategy. So we tend to think our sweet spot, our strategy should be keep advancing the technology innovation and keep putting new features and better quality product and make the product safer and easy to ride. And push the boundary of the product more, so we will maintain a strategic partner with our operators in a longer term, which in this case, actually, for example, Spin and Lyft has been a really good partner with us. And also there's many companies, and not just the big ones, and maybe the second tier, third tier companies, they don't want to be the product manufacturers, and like hotel chains and even government themselves, they prefer to have out of the box solution. They tend to be our major target audience, and of course there's our sales on the retail side has grown exponentially. Wherever the city has shared scooters, our retail sales always go up because they educate the market about the usage. Mm-hmm. And people look at that and very high exposure, right? And then people saw this and they say, oh, maybe I should get one for myself because it's actually cheaper to buy as opposed to rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you seen a simultaneous increase also in places that don't have scooters maybe? In cities that don't have shared scooters, are they going out and buying scooters because they saw them in one city and they're choosing?
Oh yeah, that too. But it's hard to pinpoint exactly the cause for other cities. But generally, you can actually see the map, the heat map, compared to the shared scooters. Sometimes it's not even our scooters; it could be someone else's scooter being shared on the market. Mm-hmm. But then our sales in the retail channel start to grow.
Interesting. And so I guess in the converse, the question I asked earlier, would Segway ever launch its own fleet of scooters or operate its own sort of service?
I think right now our strategy has maintained as we call them arms dealer strategy, or maybe another one is we prefer to stay as a product company. Mm-hmm. For example, we'd like to be the Boeing and Airbus for the airline industry, as opposed to we operate the operation on our own. One of the major factors about this is that it's a very localized business. So city relationship and also people on the ground doing the operations and the maintenance work. And those really some heavy lifting on the ground. We don't have the reach ourselves, and we our product is essentially selling to all the continents now. So we are relying heavily on the partnership strategy as opposed to we go in and operate on our own. And then, you know, I guess the minute we start operate on our own, and you know, the operators will start to look at us, oh, you know, which side.
And then they'll
on,
really
right?
build their own scooters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So in general, I think the short answer to your question is probably not anytime soon. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, you never know. I mean, these days, things change very quickly too. So, but for now, I think we're gonna stick to sort of arms dealer in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that seems like a wise strategy. I mean, just like how other companies couldn't rapidly scale up manufacturing and compete at the level at which you guys are producing. I mean, going and building those local and state and federal contacts would be challenging as well, building up that capacity.
Exactly, yeah.
And instead, it seems like there is a good symbiotic relationship instead, it seems like.
Right.
So sort of on the note of policymakers, back when the original Segway was being advanced, there was this big push in every state to classify the vehicles, to create this classification of vehicles as electric personal assistive mobility devices, or EPAMDs, EPAMDs. and it's kind of interesting because as e-scooters were coming around, folks kept on running into these state laws over and over again. But can you talk about what that looked like when Segway was trying to create these new classifications for vehicles back then?
Yeah, as you can tell, you asked me the question about I joined Segway 2.5 years ago, so I only learned this sort of second-handed from colleagues. Starting from year 2000, when the company, essentially the inception of the company, we have been communicating to the municipalities, cities, about regulations and also allow Segway to be operated, actually globally, not just in the United States. It proves to be an uphill battle for the old Segway, partially because, again, it's a little bit too early of its time. And a lot of times people look at Segway, the form factor, people will think, what is this, right? So it's,
right.
So they actually don't have something in their mind to kind of compartmentize and put this in. If you look at the industry today, in contrast, it's no longer an uphill battle because, you know, in fact, to be honest with you, we're actually not the person pushing everything. It's actually the operators pushing harder than us. And partially because they do have the local know-how, the local connections, and in different country, they actually know better how to communicate to the cities or the constituents. So in our case, we become sort of the we're now no longer in the driver's seat in this, which feels great because. You don't feel alone anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And it's actually even better that you know some people is fighting the wars and locally, and then we kind of just in the back supporting them. Mm-hmm. And so I guess timing is everything, and also the other interesting thought I had is the form factor of kick scooters. Is actually the form factor is no longer a showstopper or a barrier because the funny thing is the first vehicle you learn as a kid it's not a bicycle, it's actually a kick scooter if you know what I mean. So nobody challenges that. Oh, you know, a kick scooter is hard to learn, right? Mm-hmm. So and it becomes sort of a really accepted notion that you know kick scooter is. It's easy to use.
Yeah, it's pretty universal. All you have to do is teach people how to actually use the gas. And
exactly, and you kick, you go, right? So the user behavior, essentially, it's the same as when you were a kid. And sometimes people say it bring back some childhood memory to you, and that's why it's fun, right? Mm-hmm. So it turns out, so when the product's right, timing's right, it's really not much selling you have to do. So that's sort of what we're experiencing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess, are there any issues where you see regulations potentially inhibiting the growth of new sort of form factors. I mean, you guys are working on roller skates, or how would you define electric roller skate shoes?
I think it's probably going to be kick scooter as a predominant form factor, or maybe e-bike for the longest time before anything really innovative came out to start a new subject. Like, let's talk about this new form factor. Partially because I personally believe that consumers vote by their feet, in this case, mm-hmm. literally by their feet, because mm-hmm. it just happened that kick scooter is what people pick. You put in front of them, do you pick kick scooter versus bicycle? They'll pick kick scooters.
Right.
So we will keep pushing the boundary by providing them with the one-wheeler, the e-skates, and I don't know, God knows what form factor we have. we will have them pick their favorite. Some of them will become personal device. It may not be shared device ever. So for example, the skates. It's light and small. You can just carry them in your bag. Mm-hmm. I don't see people will share them. Right? In fact, if I have one, probably only I can ride it. Nobody else can. Single wheeler is another thing. People who ride single wheelers, they swear about them. They commute to work every day on single wheelers.
Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see them more and more around DC, and people are in suits just riding these things down a bike lane.
Yeah. And also, even in San Francisco, I saw it quite a few times as well. But if you ask the guy to share it with someone, nobody, I don't even know how to ride. I can ride pretty much everything the company produced, but not the single wheeler. Mm-hmm. Right. So it takes a little bit of learning, right? But then precisely because it's not easy for everyone to learn, it also become a cool factor, right? You know, mm-hmm. Only I can ride this. Mm-hmm. And it's a little more sporty. And in fact, the single wheeler goes really fast if you can get to that speed. Mm-hmm. And you can even do stunts and stuff. So it's really fun. Skates, actually, back to your question, because today's in the panel, people actually mentioned that as well. In the very beginning, the skates we have today is essentially two Segway, two mm-hmm. too many Segway, tiny nano Segways. And you step on them, you go. And it was a lot of people loved them. But I think this still issue needs to be addressed. For example, the range of the product, and also the ride experience for like tougher road conditions. Mm-hmm. And is that the right form factor? Well, let it play it out. See what happens in the future. However, I think one of the things is, you know, don't forget, I think Troy is a perfect example. And a lot of the hockey nations, you know, this huge population of people who skate. Mm-hmm. So you can actually totally see that, you know, if ever we produce skates that has power and with hub motor in them, which is not that hard to imagine, mm-hmm. There will probably be a big market in this space. And maybe one day you put up a pair of skates and you go. Right?
I'm imagining roller derby games with people on electric skates.
Exactly.
That'd be a blast to watch,
actually.
That would be a
blast. Yeah.
One of the interesting things about scooters is it's actually regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Commission in the U.S. And I think most of our listeners are probably more familiar with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which handles vehicles. Could you talk a little bit about dealing with CPSC and what that interaction is like?
Actually, we don't have too much interaction. I think in the early days of Segway PT, there was probably some, I can't remember what year, there's some recalls and whatnot for, you know, sort of the old days. I guess our attitude has always been, we work with CPSC very closely, and I want to make sure, you know, all the product we put out there is safe. Mm-hmm. It's actually not a choice, and we have to comply. Mm-hmm. So I can only say that, you know, not just CPSC, but also like you know the all the market we sell to, the European the CE group and a lot of the Asian standard body and whatnot, and you know we try very hard to, essentially all the product we sell have to comply to those standards, and when there's issues we basically have to rush to solve these problems and maintain a close communication channel with all the entity.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, when electric hoverboards became big, there was, they're catching on fire and things like that. And then we've seen examples of a few scooters catching on fire in the U.S. How do you approach those issues? Is it a battery issue? Is this a choice in which batteries you're using? I mean, where do some of these problems come from, and how are you approaching that?
In the early days, I don't know if you remember, I think it was like sort of summer last year, there's incident, Lime scooters caught on fire, and somehow we got involved as well because it was our product. Mm-hmm. One of the cause we find out it was a lot of them are due to like vandalism. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of dispute on whose fault is that and whatnot. But ultimately, and it proves to be that the damage from people smashing them and kind of throw them in the water was sort of the root cause of these failures. Mm-hmm. So since then, we have improved quite a bit, and including improving the safety features of the batteries and of the scooters. Mm-hmm. And also features on how to prevent people from even thinking about vandalism. And you probably will notice from the news that there's actually not much incident happened recently, especially this year. You almost haven't heard any mm-hmm. incidents at all. And globally, we saw that over millions of these scooters, and incidents is actually quite a few mm-hmm. incidents. And we're putting in even more features, like smart features that if battery gets short circuited, and it will shut down the battery automatically so it doesn't cause fire. Mm-hmm. And smart features like that. And also, of course, on the production line, there's a lot of quality assurance measures. So I think the whole industry, mm-hmm. not just us, is learning from 2018. So the scooters on the street now will become much safer, both from riding point of view and also from charging and storage point of view. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great. Now, I want to dig into from the riding and operational point of view. Whenever they initially came out, the wheels were thinner in a lot of scooters, and it seems like some wheels have been getting thicker. Mm-hmm. What sort of innovations are sort of taking place on making the ride safer, and which also tends to make it more comfortable, right? So what's happening sort of on that front?
There's actually a lot of I call them mundane type of improvement or incremental improvement. Mm-hmm. That seems to be across the board, everybody's kind of doing similar things. So, for example, the material we use for the tires, and then the structure of the tires, and putting like shock absorbers on scooters, and the battery become like swappable batteries for mm-hmm. ease of operation. And there's like locks, electronic locks features, so people don't steal them when they're parked. Mm-hmm. And to the one extreme is that we're turning the scooters into robots, right?
Right.
So that's the sort of the segue into our robo scooters, mm-hmm. where now we're having a three wheel scooter that drives itself, or at least teleoperated from the cloud. So that way, it's sort of, I call them an ultimate solution to these operational issues, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine the scooter can return to its own bay and charge itself, perhaps in the beginning just regroup themselves and gather at sort of the pickup spot, and then the driver can just go pick up them together.
Right.
To sort of, I call them the holy grail of the scooter, the robo scooter, is that they become surmountable, right? You can just call them like a ride-hailing app, mm-hmm. and the scooter will come to you. And so that will be ultimately the most optimal way for a better utilization, right? Because think about, it's not scooter, all the scooter parked there for you to pick. It's actually the scooter come to you. So I think it's not just us. The whole industry sees that sort of a golden opportunity. And so automation and AI and potentially also using the sort of the big data technique to provide a better forecast, better operational efficiencies or strategies, ultimately will make essentially everybody, or at least the survivors, profitable. Mm-hmm. So I think probably 2 or 3 years down the road, you probably will see many profitable company in business, and five or six years down the road, maybe you will see, you know, robo scooters roaming on the street sooner than the driverless cars, if you will. Yeah,
absolutely. And so are the ones that are currently, you know, able to even remotely operated, you're remotely operating mm-hmm. them, and are there cameras? Is that how you're sensing sort of the roadway environment? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Right now, it's still at sort of experimental stage, mm-hmm. but in general, they are robots. So sort of sensors for depth perceptions, and some of them use LiDAR, and some of the and obstacle detection sensors, mm-hmm. and also the mechanism, right? So the algorithm that sort of detects object, go around it, path planning, and also a lot of the sort of strategies. And that's actually happening both on the vehicle side and also on the cloud side. And also we're offering this as a sort of more a system, not just, you know, a vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's essentially become a whole system solution with a fleet of product, and also with the monitoring and sort of the big data computing power behind it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I guess to close out, I'd like to hear what your favorite form of micromobility is.
I guess the ultimate form factor is probably not born yet. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be lame to say that my favorite is kick scooter, but mm-hmm. I guess my second favorite is kick scooters. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason I said the ultimate form is not born yet is because one is, you know, right now the kick scooters, it cater to, you know, the younger crowd and the more athletic type. Mm-hmm. It only works in sunny states, and like Detroit is probably a bad example. Mm-hmm. Rainy day like this, most people probably will choose to get a taxi, right? Mm-hmm. So I think how do you address issues, especially like winter state, snow and rain? I think it calls for something more different form factor.
So like a snowmobile.
Like a maybe not snowmobile. I guess snowmobile is one sort of.
Yeah, shrink it down, throw someone in.
that's something I'll call them, like instead of putting a wheels on them, you put a belt on them, right? So they have the snowmobile in Canada, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look at some of the trajectory Segway, you know, it has been sort of engaged on, and we are getting into the space where, you know, you see these pods, right? So, mm-hmm. And in fact, even 10 years ago, we actually did an experiment with General Motors. Mm-hmm. And that time, you can actually look it up online. It's called an ENV, an electric neighborhood vehicle, I think. A networked vehicle, and it's meant to be like a personal device that kind of like work like a traveling bubble, right? And kind of like the Jetsons. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something a lot of people have experimented with. For example, Lime had this idea of a pod, so Lime pods as well. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it takes a lot of innovation to make this to sort of a final practical form factor, and I think, you know, if I have my way, probably one day people will be, you know, all roaming on the street in their own bubble. So hopefully winterized, and then you know, and with maybe a windshield or something, like windshield wiper going back and forth.
Well, it's better than a giant SUV wasting a ton of space.
Exactly. Yeah, and so it must be electric. Mm-hmm. And if you don't bother to drive, maybe the pod can drive it for you. Mm-hmm. So if you ask me, that probably will be the sort of the form factor. I don't know, maybe a decade later, mm-hmm. we probably can see that happen.
Absolutely. And this is the most fascinating part is, you know, it. You're watching the scooters, they're kind of building out. I mean, we're seeing the e-bikes, and it feels like there is this gap between the personal vehicle and the e-bike, and it'll be really interesting to see how that gap gets filled.
Totally, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, great. Tony, thank you so much for joining me. This is a lot of fun. If folks want to learn more about you or Segway, is there anywhere they can go online?
Sure, please go online, and my email is anthony.ho@segway.com, so it's write to me, and I just, you know, give me a shout on LinkedIn. I appear to be on LinkedIn more often. You're happy to communicate.
Excellent. Yeah. You can find me at AVGregR. Find the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast on Twitter. And our website is mobilitypodcast.com, quite predictably. Thanks again, Tony.
We'll
talk to you soon.
Yeah, take care.